Blog Talk Radio.
It's the Morning Show.
Okay, you want to rehearse it one time before we go on the air?
With award-winning journalist Cheryl Smith.
I'm good. I'm not that good.
Bringing you informative, enlightening, thought-provoking, inspiring, and entertaining talk radio.
Good morning. Should I do my little good morning to you song? We're all in our places with sunshiny facing, and this is the way you start a new day. Hi, y'all. How's everybody doing? You are watching and listening to the Blog Talk Show. I was just thinking, and I'm your host, Norma Adams Wade. And of course, as I remind you every week, you are my co-host, which I stole from Wendy Williams. Let me talk about just a little bit about my mask. I'm still wearing my mask, and I'm going to wear my mask when out in public. You know, the whole protocol, the whole health protocol, and the argument about whether to wear a mask or not to wear a mask just continues. But I'm going to follow what the scientists and health officials tell us to do. I'm in an office with other people, so that's one reason why I stick with it. But I'm in a room by myself, so since I'm in the room by myself, I'm going to go ahead and take it off and place it aside. So I'll have it when I go out. We've got a pretty interesting show today, and I'm looking forward to our guest. Today is Wednesday, of course, and it's right around 11 a.m. And, you know, I was sitting here looking out the window, and there's a beautiful tree right out this office window, and I was just reminiscing, I guess, about my favoritism toward trees. They are such a magnificent creation of nature. I mean, each tree has its own look, and I'm sure its own personality, its own production. You know, they give off different blooms and different leaves, and they respond differently to different parts of the season. So one day I'm going to spend part of the show just talking about my best friends that are trees, magnificent, magnificent creations. I see that our guest is here, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about her. Let me go ahead and bring her in, and then I'll tell you about her. You're going to recognize her when I add her. Okay, and there she is. But don't say anything, dear guest, because I'm going to tell everybody about you. You recognize her. All right, everybody. This is our guest for today. And let's see, can you come over a little bit, because you're halfway on the screen. Keep over a little bit more. The other way. No? Yeah, like that. Yeah. Can you go over a little bit more that way? No? I don't know if it's your right or your left. No?
I'm trying to see. Wait, okay.
Okay, let's see. There's a painting behind you. Move right toward the painting.
Okay.
Move on over toward the painting.
Okay.
on over toward the painting. Yeah, now there you go. That's it. There you go. Okay, you probably, maybe you run into a space there. You can't move over too much more. But that's it right there. Okay, everybody. Everybody, this is Sylvia Donovan Hines. And you know her. I know you know her because she's all over the place. You know her with the Celebrating Life Foundation. Wow, what a worthwhile piece of work that is. She's going to tell us about it, but basically it relates to African-American women and a few men and cancer. And she's going to tell us about it. And today she's here. Another activity is coming up soon related to the foundation, and she's going to tell us all about that. And I'm not going to give you too much background on it because we're going to talk about it during the show. But the pivotal piece of information is this health situation of cancer, how it used to affect African Americans, what the foundation has been able to do to help the situation and to enlighten more. And so let me say hello. Hello, Sylvia Donovan. Good to see you. Good to see you. Of course, now, let's begin with you telling us, what is the Celebration of Life Foundation? What is that all about?
Celebrating Life Foundation, we've been in existence for 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the organization started is I was working on a book. I had lost my aunt to breast cancer, and I was wondering what could I do as a tribute to show what she meant to me. And I thought, as a writer, photographer, if I could do a book and, you know, talk about breast cancer and maybe help other women through the journey. But what I found out as I was talking to people, that it was much bigger than I thought. Everybody I talked to was like, either my mother had breast cancer, my sister had breast cancer, my aunt had breast cancer, and to my shop, some people go, oh, I had breast cancer. So, and keep in mind, this was over 2 decades ago, and it was, there was so much silence in our community, that old adage that you don't talk about your business, you don't share your family business. Well, our family business could help save lives. Women needed to know that other women had made this journey and made it, because the other thing that we dealt with in our community is you would hear somebody had cancer, then you would hear they died. And that thing was, when they cut them open, the air hit it and it spread everywhere. Well, what happened is that by the time they got to surgery, they had waited too long anyway. So the surgery was not, you know, effective. So after I did the book, one of the things that I realized, if you're not a part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
Okay.
So it was like I had uncovered all these things that were going on. So what are you going to do to address it?
Right.
And so that's how the foundation evolved. And the major objective was to encourage, empower, and educate. Encourage people along their journey. Educate people so that knowledge is power, about all different options. And empower, because a lot of times we are our best advocate. Our families are our best advocate. We love doctors. Doctors are absolutely amazing, but you also have to know your body and know what works best for you.
Okay.
And if your doctor is saying something, you have to be willing to say, how is that going to affect me? Or, you know, like, if I got high blood pressure, I got diabetes, and I'm going through chemo. So how do all of those things work with me, not just as a statistic or this is just a baseline treatment? So that's been our journey. And
you know, when you talked about the silence, that struck me. You talked about there's been such a silence in our community. And like you said, it used to be you would hear that somebody had cancer, and then the next thing you would hear, they died. And so that just speaks volumes that our community was just more or less accepting it, you know. And I personally can recall being a young child, and my mom and her sister used to sit on the front porch and just kind of talk about neighborhood stuff. And I really remember them when the subject would come up about someone having cancer, they would lower their voices and they would whisper, she has C. They would say C, the alphabet
yes,
C. You were not even allowed to utter the word, and they would whisper, she has. And then, like you said, the next thing you would hear, they had died. And so, and then it also struck me that you said, if you're not a part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So right. You, Sylvia Donovan, and I don't think you were Hines at the time, but you took it upon yourself to step in the fray and do something. So how did you, I mean, would you lie awake at night? Would you drive in your car? I mean, how did you think of step one?
Well, step one sort of evolved from the women. There's just no words to what I've experienced in my journey with breast cancer survivors. Some of the most amazing women that I met in my life that were breast cancer.
Yeah.
And I think one of the stories that, as I was working on the book, I went to interview a young lady. Her name is PJ Vivian Sales.
Okay.
And she's from California. And I actually arranged my trip around her because she had started a support group for African American women of color. Mm-hmm. I think a documentary on it. So I really wanted to talk to her. And when I got there, every time I would speak to her, she would say, well, I'm going to be at the next event. I'm going to be here. I'm going to be there. But I never got to see her. So when I was getting ready to leave, I'm thinking, I made this trip just to speak to PJ. So I really want to see her before I leave. And I called her, and this, like, wispy voice came over the phone. And before I knew it, I mean, she was just bawling. She was crying with, like, a gut-wrenching cry.
Yeah.
Not just a little cute.
Right.
And I'm like,
one of those Oprah Winfrey cries.
Oh, it did. Well, it wasn't good. So when I hung up on her, my chest started to ache, and it was just like this pain. I just started falling on the floor. I was in so much pain.
Wow.
But when I finally got to her, I found out the reason she didn't want to see me is because her cancer had come back. And she was trying to deal with it.
Yeah, that. Right. Alone, in isolation.
Right. And I remember I wanted to photograph her for a book, and she was in her pajamas. She put on a top. We put on some makeup on her, stepped outside. You never would have known what she was going through. And so it's her voice, her face, her tenacity, all those things kept speaking to me throughout the process.
Oh my gosh. That is a story worth telling. And it kind of brings me to another part of my questioning. I'm wondering about particular women's stories that stick out in your memory as examples of this whole journey. That certainly was a riveting one. Are there other women whose experiences illustrate what this is all about?
One of them, Augusta Hicksgale, is a story that I will never forget. In fact, Susan Taylor, who used to be the editor of Essence Magazine, reached out to me, and she asked me what was one of my favorite stories because she wanted me to write about it for Essence.
Okay.
And it was Augusta's story. Augusta was a registered nurse.
Mm-hmm.
She had a very large chest, double F, similar to that of Dolly Parton. And she talked to me about when she was growing up, as soon as she started to develop, you know, she would get wolf calls because, you know, her chest was so big. So at 13, she said she was fully, you know,
developed.
And so she began to associate her sexuality with her breast.
Right.
Her mother died from breast cancer.
Okay.
She was a registered nurse. So once she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and because of the size of her breast and her history, the doctors recommended that she get a double mastectomy, which would be followed up by a reconstructive surgery.
Uh-huh.
And so the night before her surgery, she went out, she bought satin pajamas and satin pillowcase because she was trying to, like, psych herself up.
Right.
It's going to be a life-changing procedure. I mean, right. You've been known, you know, for your breast, you've dealt with this all your life, but now you're going to zero and then to a number that you don't know what that's going to be.
Right.
And so right before she was supposed to be admitted to the hospital, she got a call and they said, I'm sorry, we can't admit you because you don't have insurance. Well, she had just started working for a new hospital and her insurance hadn't gone into effect yet. And so she hung up the phone. And she's like, devastated. You know, what am I going to do? So around that time, Nancy Reagan had a mastectomy. So she called the White House. And she got to Nancy Reagan's personal assistant.
Okay, wait a minute. I got to pop. Okay. I love that. She had a personal problem. Sister girl picked up the phone and called the White House. Okay.
Hey, that's what I'm talking about.
All right,
now. That's what I'm talking about. So, anyway, she called the White House, got to Nancy Reagan's personal assistant, and by this time, she was hysterical, you know, and her assistant said, hey, calm down. Everything is going to be okay. You know, breathe in, breathe out. And so she hung up, and she said, a few minutes later, she got a call from the hospital saying, Augusta Hicks Gill, we have a bed ready for you. You know, and
oh my gosh, I love that. So did you write about it?
Yeah, I did. I wrote about it. Her testimony was in my book, but I wrote about it for Us, and that was amazing.
Oh, wow. Okay, so we're getting, before the end of the show, we're going to get to some new things that are coming, but let's spend a little more time here. Kind of remember for us, now you, celebrating life has a variety of activities and events and people, well-known names that you've hooked up with who come aboard and help push the program forward. Kind of recall for us some of your events and some of the well-known names who came aboard. I think I read somewhere Esther Rose was one of, I mean, you know, people like that on that level. Bring us, kind of tell us about different activities and different people who have come on and to help you.
Well, I got to tell you, Esther Rose was my Black woman story, because when I was working on the book, I had heard that Esther Rowe had several family members that had dealt with cancer.
Mm.
So I was like, oh man, she'd be really great
to make a
statement. And she was doing speaking at an event in Dallas, and I put out my little thinking cap, and I'm like, okay, where would she stay? She's speaking here. Where would she stay? So I picked what hotel I thought she would be at. And I called and I just said, can I speak to
Good time. Well, now I guess we should tell people that was Good Times where she was the mother, wife. Good Times, y'all. Everybody. We're talking about Esther Rose, who was on Good Times, the TV show. So you knew she was in Dallas. You found out the hotel. And then what happened?
And so I called and I said, you know, I'm just like, not so many messages. Well, I said, okay, give me one moment. And I'm on like some fake, okay.
Oh,
my
gosh. Oh, God.
I got the right hotel.
Oh, my gosh.
Everything
you do. Oh, my gosh.
And so, I talked to her and, you know, told her what I was doing. And so she told me to come over to her room. And I brought my son and we had some pictures of survivors and we spread them out over a floor. And she fell in love with my son. My son was actually the entree. He was like 7 years old, and she thought he was the cutest thing. So I didn't say anything wrong after that. But not only did she write a preface for my book, but when the book launched, she came and she spoke.
Oh,
and
wow.
You know, that voice, I mean, nobody could say it like her because she had been so impacted by cancer. And she just wanted people to know that they just could not let this pass, that they had to address it, and that it was something impactful.
Fantastic. Who else did you interact with?
Ruby D also was at the...
Ruby D?
Yes.
Okay. Now, Ruby D, everybody, you know, she's an actor. I just went blank on her husband's name. Ruby D... Ozzie Davis, Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis. Many movies, and they used to come to the Black Academy of Arts and Letters in Dallas. So anyway, go on.
And Vicki Winans performed for several times. One of the really noted people was when Richard Roundtree had come out and talked
about. Richard Roundtree played
Shaft, the star of Shaft.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Okay.
I never will forget that one because people kept saying, what are you talking about? Shut your mouth. I know, and you wrote about that, and it was just like an amazing time. In fact, he actually got teary-eyed when he shared his testimony because he said that in Hollywood, he says they don't deal with damaged goods. So he tried to keep it hidden for so long.
Okay, now the thing about Richard Roundtree is he is an example of a male who had breast cancer and the experience of it from the male point of view. And so he came aboard and shared his experience with Celebrating Life. Go ahead and tell us about it.
What people don't realize, and that was one reason that I put Michael Price in my book, was that men do get breast cancer.
Okay.
It's a smaller percentage. It's like 1% of the cases of breast cancer are male. But people need to know it does happen. Yeah. And a lot of times men are quiet about it because they don't want the stigma. This is a woman's disease. In fact, Beyonce's father was diagnosed.
Knowles. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So that's why it's really important that we talk about it.
Right.
That we embrace it. And what Richard Roundtree stated was that he was getting ready to do a action movie, and he had his shirt off, and he wanted them to design a muscle shirt for him. They were like, no, you got to show skin. And so that's when he had to talk about why he is a scar.
Right. And you said he got very emotional.
Yeah, because he said, you know, it was just like he didn't want anybody to know, and he was sort of forced to come out and to share it. And
how did they respond?
Everybody was, I mean, people were just overwhelmed, and everybody was, embraced him and felt his pain because he was really transparent of what it was like.
Okay, very good, very good. Okay, before we move on, I did want to go ahead and just visit for a minute with the obstacles. Now, you've had a number of achievements, both that you shared with us, but in every experience in life, we have to kind of clear hurdles. What comes to your mind when you think of some things where you thought, okay, I've thrown in the towel, I'm not dealing with this anymore, I can't go any further, it's not going to work? Did that ever happen, and how did you approach it, and did you get over the hurdle?
Well, I think the biggest hurdle was that a lot of times, especially early on, you know, people just didn't want to talk about cancer.
Yeah.
So it's like, so how do you move forward when this is something that people don't even want to deal with? That's how we began to get creative and do things different, like doing gospel concerts. In fact, we got a chance to do a health and wellness tour with General Mills, where they had Patti LaBelle and Chaka Khan, and we got to talk about breast cancer during their tour. But coming up with different ways to engage people so that they will be open. Now it's not as big of a struggle because I think we as a community have realized that our health is our wealth. You know,
okay.
I mean, you can have all the money in the world, but if you don't have your health, that's not going to do you any good.
Okay.
So that was the biggest, I think one of the biggest hurdles. And then the other hurdle was that women understood that they needed to put more emphasis on themselves.
Mm.
You know, we you know, especially I think as black women, it's like self, being selfish, self-care almost seems like it's selfish, and it's not. Okay. It's self-care means that I'm taking care of me so I can take care of you.
Yes. Have you seen, though, any breakthroughs on that? That seems like that's one that, I don't know, with the, and I guess this maybe it's made, it may not just be black women, it may just be women in general, but, you know, like,
yes,
just,
yes,
go,
yes.
Ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think you women, period, is that it, that has just been the thing, is that you take care of everybody else. It just seems like it's multiplied in our community. But definitely, I believe it's a woman thing, and it's an ongoing struggle. And,
yeah.
And I hear that voice for so many people in the community, and it's becoming more, the voice is stronger about self-care, because we want our sisters to be here as long as they can possibly be.
Absolutely.
Here. You know, I just don't want to have anybody else prematurely die from breast cancer, from a stroke, from heart attack, from diabetes. I just want to do everything possible to see what we can do to eliminate that.
Okay, let me remind everybody. Okay, everybody. We are talking with Sylvia Donovan Hines. There's her name right there on the screen. And she's talking to us about her journey as being the founder of Celebrating Life Foundation, which deals with bringing about awareness of African-American women and our struggles with cancer and our I'm going to say destructive history of keeping it silent. And so Sylvia jumped in the fray and more than 25 years ago and set up this foundation and did a number of things and got a number of well-known people aboard. And she told us about some of the recognized names to fight this battle and to convince African-American women about the importance of, first of all, speaking about it so you can deal with it, and giving yourself care and just being aware so that you don't have to die unnecessarily. Now, we can't save everybody, but we could certainly save way more, particularly African-American women, from this dreaded disease called cancer. So she's talking to us about that today. Now, let me just tell you that you can make comments. You can write comments in the chat, and you can even call in if you want to give a personal comment. And the call-in number is 646-200-0459, 646-200-0459. And or you can put your comment in the chat. Now, you've got an event coming up every year. Celebrating Life does a variety of activities. Kind of bring us forward, first of all, to what's going on right now, and then what's in the basket for the future. Where are we now with what you're doing?
Where are we now with what we're doing? A couple of things that we're doing that I'm really excited about that the organization has evolved to is that we now do a pink assistance fund to help people with assistance for issues that financial issues that they may need assistance with. We also have a pink spoon campaign where.
Wait, now what's it called?
Pink spoon.
Pink spoon, like the eating spoon.
And
it's pink. And we know that pink is the recovery color for cancer, the ribbons and all of that. So pink spoon, okay.
And that actually deals with connecting survivors that are going through chemo or had treatment with healthy meals.
Oh.
We're working with Chef Rhonda Sweet. She works with the survivor that selected and their nutritional needs and prepares them a week meal that they can either eat, they can freeze, and eat at their convenience to help to take that one level of stress off of their lives.
Okay, about how many women are you able to, in such a project like that, making sure that they have healthy meals. About how a dozen, two dozen, how can you reach these particular individuals?
The way we've been able to reach them right now has been by referral because we've had a small budget. Our goal is to do 100 women, and we're looking for funding to do that.
Okay.
Now we've just been doing it by
referral. Okay. Now let me go back to the assistance fund. So you're in the process of fundraising, I guess, for this particular project, and I would suspect maybe other projects. You want to tell us how can, if someone wants to contribute, how do they do that?
They can make a donation on our website at www.celebratinglife.org.
Okay. And we'll, at some point in the discussion, we will put all of your contact, and it's already on the screen now, www.celebratinglife.org. Okay, so it's
www.celebratinglife.org.
Okay, not just celebrating, but celebrating life. Okay,
yes,
we'll have to correct that on the screen. www.celebratinglife.org. Okay,
yes.
Very good. So they can go to the website and make a contribution, and that will help move that particular project. And it would also help, are there other projects or aspects of it that funding would help?
Yes, all of our projects, we don't deal with research. It takes millions and millions of dollars for research. Our goal is to help survivors that along their journey.
Okay.
We also have done a Hope for the Holiday campaign that we do at the end of the year for women that are going through treatment. We do gifts and we adopt a single mom. Last year, we adopted two single moms. We got gifts for them and their families. And we also partnered with the Cochran Law Firm. And we were able, with their assistance, to give each woman $700 in cash that they could use for whatever they needed outside of the...
Not just for the holiday, but at any point during the year?
Mm-hmm. That's what the money was, however they needed it.
However they needed it. Great. That was last year, you said?
Yeah, we do it every year. At the end of the year. And then we've been doing partnering with the Making Chemo Bearable organization. Once a year, we do Chemo Day, where we give gifts to those that are going through treatment. We start that in June. This year, we're going to do it for several months because we got a huge donation of skincare products, lotions, skin creams that we are doing for hospitals and for staff members.
Now, first I want to talk about you as a photographer. And then from that, I want to move to something else. But I need everybody to know that you're one of the premier photographers in our community in Dallas. And you used that personal skill in your foundation work. And you've produced beautiful photographs of the women who are going through the journey of surviving cancer. And so out of that, combining your ability as a photographer and the experience of women dealing with cancer, you came up with the Celebrating Life calendar.
Yeah.
And now I want you to share with us some experiences of the women. I imagine that was kind of fun. I would imagine it was fun for some of these women who, like you say, I would suspect you get down in the dump, and like the woman you talked about, you went all the way out of town and she just fell apart because she didn't want to let you know that he would come back. But anyway, tell us about the fun part that I can imagine that the women had, just dressing up and, posing for the camera and then seeing the final product of the calendar. Tell us about that.
The breast cancer calendar, an amazing experience because we have a makeup artist that does their makeup, and then a survivor gets a personal photo shoot, and it gives them a chance to bring out their personalities. And it's just a lot of fun. And for a couple of women that had not been a part of the calendar before that I photographed recently, they were just as excited. It was like, I mean, because really when you think about it, as adults, people usually, they don't take pictures. You know, you're a professional, you get a headshot every now and then, you know, or when you get married or something like that. But just to take pictures and to get your makeup done and just to be fun and free, you know, everybody has that little motto in them and it gets to come out.
Did you just do one calendar? Because I can't, how many calendars?
I believe we've done five.
That's what I thought, because I've seen several of them. And I look, I'm remembering, seems like there was one. I want to say there were two sisters who were photographed. And then I remember one where they were in, it might have been the sisters, they had on like boxing gloves, like we're going to beat this thing, you know. And there were different poses or different scenarios that the photographs illustrated. How did you decide, or maybe the women themselves, how did y'all come about how you would present them?
Well, Vicky Hicks had photographed with us before, and Vicky has an amazing story. She was in high school, she was a senior in high school, and she said something just made her want to buy my book. And so she bought my book, and now she is a breast cancer survivor.
That is,
when she told me that story, I was like, it was just, you know, chilling. But her mother and her sister are both survivors. In fact, her sister, I think, was diagnosed like months apart. Mm. And when I photographed them, it was so powerful for them together that, you know, it just turned into the cover.
Wow, that's amazing. Now, I wanna pivot here. How did you get, now you studied professionally journalism, and part of that also is your photography. What drew you to photography, and how, where were you in life when that idea struck you?
That's so funny. I started with photography when I was 9 years old. My mother got me involved with 4-H, which is sort of like Girl Scouts. And at the time, I was just really, really hated it. I just couldn't believe, you know, I mean, everybody's playing outside. Why do I have to go 4-H? You know, I'm in Chicago. What is the world? You know, and you have to pick different areas that you, like, study for the year. And so I picked photography just, you know,
You said it was Girl Scouts.
4-H.
4-H. Okay, go ahead.
And you get ribbons from white being the lowest to purple being the highest ribbon. And the first year I got a white ribbon, so I went and I looked at all the people that had gotten purple ribbons, and what I realized is those people took a lot of pictures. I mean, they took a bunch of pictures. So the next year, I'm like, I'm going to get a purple ribbon.
Okay.
My family hated me. And that
here she come with that camera.
Oh, and that holds true today. However, my aunt, who has been the major culprit in my camera, I think that she was just here, and she said that as much as they teased me about my camera, she said she realized when they were going to family pictures that a lot of the pictures I had taken and how valuable those are, especially when somebody passes, you know, those memories. So I think they're beginning to, in their later years, appreciate what they hated.
Exactly. So do you have some favorite photographs over the years that you've taken, either like family shots or with celebrating life? Are there some ones that just really touch you?
With celebrating life, there are a couple pictures that touch me. One is the one that I did in my book of Brandon Barbara Ortiz. And I remember Jesse Hornbuckle, which is a professional photographer here in Dallas, he had helped me with this shot. And we had spent just half a day, you know, with the lighting and shooting her. And we were almost finished, and she was wearing a gown that sort of draped over. And it started to flip, and she grabbed the gown. And when she grabbed it, you could see the silhouette of her figure that she was, you know, very shapely, very much a woman. And I just said, look up. And she looked up, and I took a picture, and that picture was amazing.
Oh.
I wrote a poem after doing that shoot because it said so much that she was very much a woman.
Oh, my God. Is she still with us? Do we
yes,
know?
Yes, yes.
Very good, very good. I love it. I love it. And so,
photographs that I really like, I did a calendar for Emmitt Smith when he was MVP of the season with the Dallas Cowboys, and I did a picture of him and Michael Irvin and him and Tony Dorsett. I think those two shots are like some of my favorite.
So you did a professional shot of Emmitt, and who was, and Dorsett?
Yes.
Okay. Very good. So those kind of stand out.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, did we talk about the sister to sister?
No, we haven't. We haven't talked about that.
Okay. Tell us about what is that, and how does that fit into celebrating life?
Well, really, I have to just give a huge shout out to my BFF, Giselle Fisher, because in the early days, Giselle was in the trenches with me with Celebrating Life, and we started to look at, we were going to different health fairs, and we kept seeing, you know, people with the Heart Association strokes, and they were saying some of the same things that we were saying, and we thought, well, how do we come together and just make this one big message for our community?
Uh-huh.
And that's when we thought about the Sister to Sister. That's how the Sister to Sister Fitness Festival evolved. It's like, let's do one event that just deals with wellness. So we
okay.
talk about health and encourages the whole community to get healthier.
Okay, okay. So what goes on with what goes on with that?
With the Fitness Festival, it's a 5K walk run.
Okay.
A lot of people do it that have never been involved with a 5K before. Sometimes it's a person's first 5K. Then we also have screenings. We've done mammography screenings. In fact, a couple of ladies have been diagnosed with breast cancer after being screened at our
Really? Event. Oh, yeah. My goodness.
And
Yeah.
One of my current board members 5 years ago just came to the event. She was in transition. She just retired, didn't have insurance, got screened, and found out she had.
Oh, my gosh. Now, that ought to make you feel that what you're doing is so worthwhile. So
yes.
worthwhile. Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely. Now, and I, as also part of the walk run, you have what I would call, I guess, an expo event where vendors
yes,
and people
yes, yeah,
tell
yeah.
us about that. And if someone wants to have products or whatever, how would they get involved with the expo part of the Sister to Sister Fitness walk run?
They would just have to fill out a vendor form. The vendor fees
correcting some technical things here.
Okay.
Was he one of the vendors, were you saying?
Yeah, he's gonna be one of the vendors for this year.
Okay. Okay.
We have people that do things with all types of for weight loss, for we have people to do head wraps, vegan type things. And one of the things I'm excited about is we're bringing in Mary Lou Davis, who was one of the finalists for season 19 of Hell's Kitchen. And
You know what? It's hard for me to watch that show because I get so tense. But she, what, Mary Lou what now?
Mary Lou Davis.
And she was one of, did you say she was a finalist?
Yeah, she was a finalist. They start out with 18 chefs and they end up with two that try to go through the door to see who will be the chef that Chef Gordon Ramsay chooses. And it was to be his premier chef at his Lake Tahoe location. And she was one of the two people that put her hand on the door. Even though she didn't go through the door, she fought off a lot of contenders.
Yeah, she was one of the last two, the final two. Oh, that's great. So she's going to be there. Is she going to do a menu or something? Or a...
She's going to do a cooking demo, and she's going to do some special signature items that she did on the show for some breast cancer.
Oh, how lovely. Okay, now you got to tell us, when is this expo and when is the sister-to-sister fitness walk run? When is all of this happening?
It is going to be October 2nd at the Allen E. Thames Cedar Hill Recreation Center.
Okay, what's the say it again, at the where?
Allen E. Thames.
Okay.
Cedar Hill Recreation.
And that's Allen, A-L-L-E-N, and then?
Allen, A-L-L-A-N, Allen.
Okay. And then it's Sims, S-I-M-S?
Uh-huh.
And that's Allen. In Cedar Hill?
Yes.
Okay, and that's a rec center in Cedar Hill. Okay.
Yes.
And now, you kind of have, you've been having it there for a while, is that correct?
Yes. Correct.
Okay. So, and that's October 2nd. I'm assuming that's a Saturday.
It is a Saturday.
Okay.
From 8:30 to 12:30.
Okay, 8:30 to 12:30. And then, so again, so when people decide to participate, you get there early and then you do a walk, 5K walk run. Starting at the rec center, right?
And then
go ahead.
We go through the course. The rec center has a course, the Red Oak Trail, and that's the course that we'll be walking.
Okay. And how long did you say it takes to walk the trail?
It depends. I mean, some of the runners may finish in like 15, 17 minutes, and walkers probably maybe even more like 45 minutes.
Okay. And then after you finish the walk run, then you go into the center.
Right.
And that's where what I'm calling the expo. What do you call it? I'm calling it an expo. I'm going to call it an expo festival. Okay, and then all of these, I've been there, and it's exciting. All of these wonderful vendors all around with all, and you, like you said, the demos, I remember one lady had some really, 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 really tasty cupcakes.
Yes. Cupcakes are
absolutely amazing. Right. And I think even there were some vendors who were, their products were in insurances, I think, then community information, just like a community vendor expo, just wonderful, right. Wonderful. And then I think you had some wonderful, I'm calling them young people, but young adults who did like entertainment, I believe.
Right, yeah. We had dancers, we had singers, a lot of different things.
Right, yeah. It was fun. It was a fun experience. Lots going on. So, okay, that's coming up October 2nd. Now, everybody, let me remind you that we're talking with Sylvia Donovan Hines. And let's see how much time do we have left here. I lost my time. Let me see, what time is it? Because we don't want to hold you. I think we've got about 10 more minutes. If we go over just a little bit, will that be okay? Okay, so we've got about 10 more minutes, but we might go over a little bit because I've got a few more things I want to find out about. But our guest today is Sylvia Donovan Hines, and she's telling us about the Celebrating Life Foundation and how it works with African-American women and helping them to survive breast cancer and just an educational, just a number of educational things that the foundation has done to bring about awareness mm-hmm. and to fight against our old cultural habit in the African-American community of being so secretive and frightened and afraid. And I remember my own aunt and mother sitting on the porch talking, and they wouldn't even say the word cancer. They would lower their voices and whisper and say, "She's got C." And so we're trying to get people past and bring it out in the open so you can be aware, so you can find out about help that is available, so you can be a dedicated survivor. And then, of course, she's done a book and a calendar, literally celebrating life for these African-American women. Now, I want, if you will, tell us a little bit about Sylvia Donovan-Hines and where did she grow up? What was she about as a child? What were some of her childhood experiences that helped shape this dedicated public servant that you are today? Tell us about young Sylvia.
For people who know me and have followed my journey, I think one of the things that has really made me who I am was the fact that I was raised by, in all honesty, I was raised by one of my mother's coworkers.
One of your mother's?
Coworkers.
Coworkers, okay.
When I was 4 years old. And the person who raised me was very compassionate and very loving. And I always knew biological mother, and she was always, you know, in and out of my life a couple times a year, you know, Easter, Christmas, those kind of things. And my adopted mom passed from metastatic cancer when she was 83.
Okay. How recently was that?
How long ago was that? Mm-hmm. It was in 2009.
Okay.
And in fact, that was the first year after she passed, that was the first year that we went to the, started our, the walk in the...
Great. Mm-hmm.
And then later in life, I actually ended up taking care of my biological mom, who had Alzheimer's disease, and being her caregiver for 6 years.
Let's put a pin in that. That's an interesting life experience. So there you were, young child, and your mother's coworker from, I think you said you were about, like, did you say you were roughly 4 years old? Okay, and then the coworker raised you, and you had ties with her. And then mm-hmm. is she the one that passed in 2009?
Yes, she passed.
And then she passed in 2009, and you had kept care for her, I believe.
Yes, I did.
Okay, and but then here's what your life does. It doesn't about faith.
Yeah.
And you get oh my gosh. And then you get, even though you had known your biological mother through mm-hmm. you know, through periodic visits and what have you, then you really kind of got back close to her.
Yeah. Okay. I developed a relationship as her caregiver over 6 years that I never had with her when I was growing up. And by the time she transitioned, I mean, we just had this amazing, genuine love for each other. And I mean, only God can do something like that.
I want you to tell me, how do you define your life? Why are you on the planet? I mean, seriously. Why are you on the planet?
To be love and to give love.
To be love. And to give love.
That's why I'm here.
Wow. That about sums it up. I mean, how can you do more than that? Wow. And so, but don't you sometimes get tired? I mean, do you get tired? How do you revive yourself?
To me, people re-energize me. I mean,
okay.
I love people. And, okay. I enjoy traveling, and one of the things that I learned as a caregiver is that I would designate, like, every 3 months, I would go somewhere. to like rejuvenate my battery and then come back and be prepared for, because you know, I mean, when you're dealing with somebody with a terminal illness, it takes a lot of different turns, and things can go from good or okay to just horrible in moments. So you have to be at a certain level that those things don't wipe you out if you're trying to take care of somebody else.
Okay, we've just about reached a point where I want to ask you, are there other points that we have not touched on, or upcoming events or experiences that you want to tell the public about that we've not had the opportunity to talk about right now?
Well, of course, the biggest thing that, you know, we want to talk about is, you know, the upcoming Fitness Festival.
Okay.
We really want people to share with your friends, your family members. And the good thing this year, because we're still in this transitional phase with COVID, is that we're allowing, if people want to do it virtually, they can do it virtually.
Oh.
Or they can do it on site, either way.
Okay.
So it gives them that opportunity. This is one of our major fundraisers to help us with, you know, the things that we're doing in the community. So people can also make a donation if they don't want to walk or run for the event. The other thing that I want to share is that because we received such an amazing donation of skincare products, the first 300 people that register are going to get our commemorative 20-year package, which will include skincare products valued at about $175.
Oh, how wonderful. Okay, now, a co-host who is our audience, I know y'all heard all of that. And I somehow had missed that they can also participate virtually. That's a good piece of information. I had completely missed that. So once you do it virtually, how would that work? You get to, I guess, see the festival, the expo part that I'm talking about. But how does that work with the walking part?
Well, we got a chance to walk that out last year with COVID. The whole event was virtual. So we did a Zoom, so people were able to key in as they started their walk. We had people from 16 states that participated. And, you know, we wanted to still have that component. And a lot of people just took pictures of themselves, did our hashtag, and posted them, and they could do it on the treadmill, they could do it in the park, they could do it in the community, they could do it with just a couple of friends. But we want to still be concerned about keeping people healthy and keeping people in their comfort zone wherever they are, as we are still dealing with residues of this pandemic.
I love that. So in 2020, the entire activity was virtual. And so I guess now I have to kind of walk things through my mind. So I could go in my den and get on my treadmill and, well, as you said, tune in. And I'm in with everybody else, and there I am doing, or I can walk through my community, I guess.
Yes.
And I'm still tuned in with everybody else. And then at the festival part, everybody could see that, I guess.
Right. We didn't do much of the festival part.
Okay.
We allowed people to come in. We played some music. And we did a Zoom call prior to the event where we had one of our favorite people, Lynn Hayes with KRMB, who talked and inspired people. We had some testimonies from survivors, you know, and shared some things about the organization.
Really, really, really good. All righty. So okay, now on the screen, we have the website, and then, of course, your email again is clf@celebratinglife.org.
Right.
And I think there's even a phone number. Am I correct at that 475 number?
Yes,
that's a phone number, 214-475-0664. 561. If you don't have, you know, technology, you can use that phone number, 214-475-0661. Okay, so everybody, this has been a delightful visit with Sylvia Donovan-Hine, and I just want you to go forward and conquer, because the work that you're doing is so worthwhile, and you have been such a real blessing, to be honest about you, in the life of so many women. Are there any kind of statistics about the African-American experience with cancer and even surviving cancer or even loss of life? What kind of statistics are out there?
Well, the one thing, Norma, that I look at in 2.5 decades that I've dealt with women and the community with breast cancer is that two things. One thing has slightly changed is the incidence of breast cancer. When I first started out, the incidence of breast cancer in the African-American community was slightly less. And now it's pretty much almost the same as white women. However, at this time, and this was still the case when I started, is that African-American women are over 40% more likely to die from breast cancer than any other ethnic group. That has not changed.
Yet we
still have been disproportionate in reference to mortality. There are a couple variables on that. One of them is the fact that we tend to present at a latter stage of the disease.
Yeah.
That's why they say early detection, you know, is so important, because not only early detection helps you in reference to finding the disease at a point where it could be more treatable, but it gives you more options. When you discover the disease early, a lot of times women can have what is called a lumpectomy, where they go in and they just remove the tumor and some of the surrounding tissue, as opposed to having a complete mastectomy. Or women have a mastectomy and don't have any of the additional treatment like chemo or radiation. So finding the disease early is also important. But one of the things that we have noticed, especially more recently, is that you're getting younger women that are diagnosed with breast cancer. And cancer, when it's diagnosed usually at an earlier age, is more aggressive. We've had the youngest person that I have experienced that had breast cancer was 16 years old. So that's not an age where you're going to be thinking about a mammogram. We've had a number of women in their 20s or early 30s. And there's a form of breast cancer called triple negative, which tends to be more aggressive. A lot of times there are more opportunities for that type of cancer to come back again. So those variables, I think, are so important. And triple negative breast cancer is more prominent in African-American women.
Oh, and as we get ready to leave, just kind of bring us through some suggestions or steps, I guess, about early detection. Like the little 16-year-old, I don't know. But
that's just really just paying attention to your body and just knowing something is wrong, you know. That is one of the most important things that I want women to understand, is that we have to understand our bodies. You know, when one of your breasts our breasts are uneven anyway, but you know when one is totally disproportionate, or the texture of your breast changes and is more dimpled, or the coloring of your breast changes, or your nipples invert, or you're getting some type of discharge. Those are things that you notice.
Okay.
That you would want to bring to your physician's attention.
Okay. Very good. Now I used to hear a lot of talk about self-examination.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
I think the medical society goes through different changes, but we as women, we as advocates, I think we have to be still singing the same message. Number one, a breast self-exam I've known that it had saved people's lives.
Okay.
So there was more prominence on it before, but now more people are just pressing the issue of mammography. But you have to be in tune with your own body.
Okay.
And the whole idea of doing breast self-exam is to examine your breast once a month at a time. If you're still going through a cycle, that is not going to be when you would be, you know, going through your cycle and may have hormonal changes in your body. But the ultimate is definitely paying attention to yourself, looking at yourself in the mirror and seeing changes and pressing your breath and seeing if there's something there.
Very good. Well, everybody, please join me in thanking Sylvia Donovan Hines, not just for visiting with us today, but for the work that she does and for how she reaches out and is just constantly helping other people and serving other people and just making her life a service to others. So we'll say goodbye now. Thank you again for coming. And everybody, October 2nd, Saturday,
yes.
October 2nd, and meet at Allen Sims Recreation Center in Cedar Hill.
Yes.
And things will begin around 8:30, so they would need to get there around what time?
Our warm-up and everything starts around 8. So you want to get there early, stretch out, and get ready. But one of the things I also want to let people know is that we will be sending out the t-shirts, and everybody who participates will get a medal. So everybody's a winner.
Oh my gosh, everybody's a winner. So everybody who participates will get a medal. Now, what did you say again about the t-shirts? How do you get the t-shirts?
When you register, as long as you register by September the 5th, you will get your shirt in time for the event. All registration after the 5th. You will still get a shirt, but it won't be mailed until the event.
Okay. Well, you want a shirt, everybody. So register by September 5th. Write that date down. Register by, go to the website, register by September 5th, and you can get your t-shirt. And then I love that everybody gets a medal. And then, and then you talked about all of the self-care items that will be available. That's wonderful. Sylvia, thank you again, and take care. We'll say bye now.
Can I take a picture with you, Nora? Just so that,
how do I do that?
The eye patch, you just smile. There you go. Thank you.
You got it?
I got it.
All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Okay. All right, everybody. You know that was Sylvia Donovan Hines. We're going to take a short break. You are listening to I Was Just Thinking. I am your host, Norma Adams-Wade, and we will be back. Oh, just like the river I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard to live it, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. And I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. Okay, we are back. Okay, just wanted, we had a guest, what was it, a week ago, I think, a couple of weeks ago, Dr. Ife Williams, and she has written a book about Dick Gregory, and we see his, where is he? We see his photograph here, comedian and social commentator Dick Gregory. And Dr. Ife Williams was our guest, and she talked about a book that she's written about him. So you can go to Amazon and look it up, Dr. Ife Williams. And she also writes a column for iMessenger Media. Let's see. Let me just see if I can see her. And this one that I have here, I may not. Yeah, here she is. So if you pick up iMessenger Media, she calls it "Wake Up and Stay Woke," which is a very familiar comment that Dick Gregory makes. And so you can go to Amazon and get her book that she has written about him, and let's see, trying to get the title. My brain is stopping on me for the title of the book, and well, anyway, just look for Dr. Ife Williams and her book about Dick Gregory. I just went blank on the title of the book. But it's available at Amazon, and you know about Dick Gregory. I mean, he had an opinion about just about everything. He was really into health, and he left no stones unturned. And there's even been a documentary about him. And so he's pretty respected and pretty well known. And, you know, he used to come to Dallas. He used to come to Dallas to support the bowl-a-thon that Cheryl Smith, the Don't Believe the Hype bowl-a-thon that Cheryl sponsored annually. And so he was just a great public servant. I'm determined to find the name of this book here. Just bear with me. Bear with me a second here. Okay, here it is. It's called Dick Gregory. Wake up and stay woke, running for life. Okay. And Cheryl Smith interviewed Dr. Ife Williams at the African American Museum about a week or so ago on July 18 about her whole, he was a very good friend of hers, and she participated in so many of his civil rights and human rights activities globally. I mean, he was all over the globe. And so the book that she has written is both a tribute to him and a clarion call for the rest of us to pick up where he left off when he transitioned a few years ago. And not just sit in your house and watch TV, but actually go out into the world and make a difference. Wake up and stay woke. Wake up and stay woke. Running for life. Dr. E, the initial E, Faye, F-A-Y-E, Williams. So get that book on Amazon. I also attended an interesting activity last night at this place called Nawlins on the High Line, right off of Oaklawn. And it was a gathering of local Black journalists, the local chapter of the National Association of Black Journalists. And to introduce the new board members and the plans that they have for promoting our African-American position in media in all aspects, print, broadcast, digital. And so it was a very encouraging gathering to show that we're on the right track for the future of African Americans in media. You know, the technology has opened a lot of new doors for getting our story out. When I entered the field, it was mainly newspapers and a little bit of TV and radio, of course. TV and radio. But now with social media and the whole digital aspect, oh my gosh, we've got just blogs and all of that. We've got all kinds of ways to get our message out. And so the current crop of Black journalists, they're on top of it. And it gives us hope for the future. And so it was the local chapter, the DFW, Dallas-Fort Worth Association of Black Journalists, which is an arm of the National Association of Black Journalists. So that was a very encouraging activity. So you are watching. I was just thinking, I am your host, Norma Adams-Wade, and we're going to talk a little bit about some things that have been going on in the news. And I did want to make note of this particular thing. This really caught my eye the other day, and it's a sports story. I call it a sports story, but the headline was that athlete protest acts evolve with time. So what it's saying that we know the whole Colin Kaepernick experience and how his taking a knee put him out of the NFL because he was so dedicated to bringing attention to social injustices for African Americans. But this piece was talking about how the act of protest now among athletes has evolved with time. Now, currently, it talked about the British women's soccer team that pledged to take a knee before the kickoff against Chile in their Olympic tournament opening. And they were, again, the entire British women's soccer team came together and decided to take a knee. And they said they wanted to show everyone that this situation is something serious and that it's not just in one location, that it's an international experience. And it said, what a way to do it on an Olympic stage. And they're right. I mean, that's a big stage. And it took me back. And this particular piece made mention of back in 68 when the two African-American athletes were on the podium and they raised their fist. And that had never happened before. And the two African-American athletes, the sprinters, were John Carlos and Tommy Smith. Now, there was a third person, an Anglo. He agreed to wear a particular medallion in support. And the athletes also took their shoes off, and they were standing there in their stocking feet to point out that poverty was a fight that we need to take on, that some people don't even have shoes to wear. They took their shoes off on the Olympic podium and raised their fists in a Black Power sign. Some of you haven't even been on the planet long enough to have that memory, but it happened in 68. It was just shortly, I believe, after Martin Luther King had been killed. And so, as we all know, with African-American history, a lot was going on in the 60s. So they actually raised, and there was the period of right beginning getting into the whole Black Power movement. Now, Black Power really took off more in the 70s, but this was in 68. But, you know, there had been the Watts riots and all of this stuff in New Jersey and Newark, New Jersey, and all of the civil rights activities and riots that were going on across the United States. So they took a stand, and oh my gosh, they suffered as a result of that. They were ostracized by the Olympic officials, and they took a lot of heat. But the whole point of this piece to show the evolution of protests among athletes was how things were back then and how they are now. And we, of course, we know the story of Muhammad Ali and how he took a lot of heat because he would not participate in the Vietnam War. And so athletes have just really truly been ostracized if they take any kind of public stance. And then again, of course, you know, Colin Kaepernick, who was a very, very talented and promising quarterback, he was kicked out of the NFL. And still, even though he set the course, and so many have followed after him now, and that started back in 2011, the terrain has changed. It's still not an easy thing to do, to take a political stance if you are an athlete, but it's being done more and more. And so, it even talked about a player from Belgium and Italy took a knee before the Euro 2020 a quarterfinal match, and the gesture was recognized globally and he was doing that to bring attention to the murder of George Floyd. And he did it 14 months after Floyd had been killed, but he wanted to this player from Belgium took a knee and he wanted to bring attention, and he did. So again, back to the British women's soccer team, the whole team, and then there were other instances in Tokyo, the United States, and Sweden. Those were different places where athletes have taken stances, all as a result of the murder of George Floyd. The England and Italy men's team took a knee before the European Championship during that period of time. And all of this stuff that's going on now is almost 50 years since John Carlos and Tommy Smith raised their fist back in 68. Can you imagine? Almost 50 years since they took that stand, and now here we are. We come from them. We come from Muhammad Ali, and we come from Colin Kaepernick, and now, you know, this whole British women's soccer team, not just African-American, but of other cultures have taken on this position. So the athletic ban has relaxed somewhat, but now taking a stand on the medal podium is still off limits. Now the Olympic officials have kind of relaxed the ban a little bit, but it's still banned that you can't do it from the podium. But I'm still paying very much attention now. But Colin Kaepernick, he's not hurting. He's pretty well off financially, and he's very, very, very involved still in various protest activities. Of course, we know he played with the San Francisco 49ers, but he has not been signed by any other team. But he's supporting all kind of causes now. We know that he did a Nike commercial, and he's done some publishing, and he does some blogs. He is doing some publishing. So he's staying very socially involved in social justice causes. But things have really evolved since those days in 68, shortly after the assassination of Martin Luther King, when John Carlos and Tommy Smith took a stand on the podium at the Olympics. Now, the European man from Australia, his name was Peter Norman. Now, he was Anglo, as I said, and he took a lot of heat as well, and it really kind of emotionally damaged him, to be honest. And he did eventually die of a heart attack, and John Carlos and Tommy Smith attended his funeral, and they were pallbearers. But it speaks to the price of heroism. When you're brave enough to take a public stand, most of the time individuals just make up their mind that whatever comes, I'm going to do this. And it reminded me of the testimony, the congressional hearing that started, I think it started yesterday, with the security officers at the Capitol, and how they told their personal stories and during that hearing, and how they have taken such an emotional toll, still struggling, still almost like with PTSD, still struggling with the aftermath of that terrible insurrection day on January 6th at the Capitol, and how they were brutally, physically attacked and beat with different weapons, flagpoles, and just just a number of things that were used to physically abuse them, and the African-American security officers were called all kind of negative, prejudicial names. And so the emotional toll and the physical toll was big. And so, but when you decide, you know, they could have walked off the job, but they stood their ground and they took the heat and suffered. The price of heroism is great. You pay a big price for taking a public stance. And so I wanted to just bring that up to you. I also wanted to bring to your attention about this redevelopment that's going on in the bottom. There's an area just west of the Trinity River after you go across the Trinity Bridge and go west. The area there is called the Bottom, and it's right there by 8th Street. That's one of the streets, 10th Street, 8th Street, that whole area there. And so right now, the community leaders and some investors have been on the course for a little bit of a while to bring some redevelopment to the area, and it is beginning now. The ground has been broken to develop some new homes in the area, and the groundbreaking was this past last week, last Tuesday. Now the project began actually the efforts to try to get something brought, some redevelopment brought to the area, goes back to 2008, and this development company called Texas Heavenly Homes, they purchased land in the bottom, and this developer, the head of the company, Dick LeBlanc, you know, was leading the project. And it's also over there by the Eloise Lundy Recreation Center. And that's going to be part of the redevelopment in that area. Now, the Golden Gate Baptist Church in the area is two different efforts. And interestingly, this developer, Dick LeBlanc, with Texas Heavenly Home, he's working with a ministry that deals with ex-offenders who have been released and come back, the formerly incarcerated. Now that person, it's two ministers involved in this. One, in both of them are Parker. This particular one who works with Heavenly Homes, he's a pastor, but he's over this group called Restoration Outreach of Dallas. Now, his name is Jeffrey Parker, and he's a pastor, but he's over this project that works with the formerly incarcerated, and they've joined forces with this developer, Dick LeBlanc, and they're going to do a lot of to try to bring that area back. But now also Golden Gate Baptist Church is also involved. So it's two different efforts going on. And the pastor of Golden Gate is Vincent Parker. So we've got a Pastor Jeffrey Parker, and we also have Pastor Vincent Parker. Now, I was not able to establish whether they're related or not. I don't know. They're both Parkers, but I suspect they may not be related, but I do not know. I was not able to determine that. Maybe I can find that out later. But now the project with Golden Gate Baptist Church, and we know that CBT, the very renowned CBT Smith, the late CBT Smith, was a longtime, very well-known pastor of Golden Gate, and then Vincent Parker currently is. But their project is called the Golden Seeds Foundation. The Golden Seeds Foundation. And it's a community, it's the community development arm of the church, Golden Gate Missionary Baptist Church. And so what they plan to do is have a mixed use effort going on where they will bring in housing, and the housing stock can either be apartments or townhouses, could be that, and brings in park, and part of the park would be related to the Eloise Lunde Recreation Center that's already there, and then a shopping plaza. So they're working with the city of Dallas, the church leaders, some neighborhood leaders, and some developers that the church is working with to do this effort, as well as this LeBlanc person, and they're bringing housing. So there's a lot to pay attention to going on in the area called the Bottom. Now, the history of the Bottom is that it was very poverty prone and very it was a flood zone, right? It's right there. As I say, you leave downtown, you go over the bridge and over the Trinity Bridge, and then you're right there by 8th Street and 10th Street and all like that. And it was very flood prone back in the earlier days of Dallas. And so people who lived in this poverty area there at the time, all the way back to the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s and all like that, the area was terribly, terribly flood. And so that's kind of where the name The Bottom came from. But of course, we know the levee helped a lot when the city finally built the levee. But at any rate, this housing stock part, the starting price for these houses would be between $200,000 and $300,000. And ultimately, now right now they broke ground on, I think, about four homes to begin with, but ultimately they plan to build about 400 new homes, and the price range would be, as I said. So we're going to pay attention to that. But now one caveat or one precaution that everybody in the neighborhood, as well as those of us who are going to pay attention, we want to see that this development effort does not displace the current families, and we know that happens. We know that it happens when development comes. In many instances, people who are living in an area, particularly if it is a low-income area, they end up being kicked out. We don't want that to happen on the Bottom. We want this development to help current residents there, not hinder them, not run them off, not displace them. So we want to pay attention and make sure that these development efforts do exactly what they say they're going to do. So we're going to pay attention to that. I also cannot. And what about, did y'all know that the grandmother of Juneteenth, Opal Lee, that the Texas Senate is talking about hanging her photograph in Austin, in the Senate in Austin. And of course, she was the whole force behind the Juneteenth becoming a national holiday. And so some powerful people in Austin have gotten behind this effort to hang her photograph there. And it would be the first portrait added to that Senate chamber in many, many decades. Some of the others whose portraits are already there. I think Barbara Jordan is one. She was the first African-American woman elected to the Texas Senate. I think hers is there. And there are other figures. Some of them are Confederate people, but we're not going to talk about that. But it's been quite a while since an individual has had their photograph added. And so it would make the Senate walls more reflective of average. Then I don't think Oprah Lee would be considered average because she might call herself that, but she has won her place in history, so we can't really call her an average citizen. But the whole effort is to pay attention to what people who are not like the president and elected folk, but just, you know, citizens, and to shine light on what they're doing. So we commend her for that, and she's known now officially forever as the grandmother of Juneteenth. Now, I also wanted to pay attention to the anniversary of Santos Rodriguez. You know, he was the young Hispanic young man who at 12 years old, a Dallas police officer shot him to death while he was handcuffed in the police car on the accusation that he took food from a vending machine. So he and his brother, who was a year older, were placed in the back seat of a police car. And this Dallas police officer played Russian roulette with his gun, placed it to the temple of this 12-year-old Latino young man, and tried to make him confess. And he actually pulled the trigger, and it blew the brains out of the 12-year-old, and he actually died. And so it was a huge protest back when that happened. And so every year now, there's a memorial. This young man is buried at the Oakland Cemetery on Malcolm X. And every year there's a memorial. So the memorial was just this past weekend. And every year the Dallas Police Chief will come and pay tribute to Bessie Rodriguez, who is the mother of Santos Rodriguez. And so this year, our current police chief, Garcia, came and formally apologized to her for what happened to her 12-year-old son. His brother, who was a year older, he's still around. He's still around, and the memory is blazed into his memory. The previous year, Chief Renee Hall came and was at the memorial, and she also spoke her grief from the police viewpoint of this terrible, terrible incident. The officer, as history will tell us, was only given 5 years. And he ultimately did die, however. We'll leave that to your own conclusions. But he was only given 5 years for that. But ultimately, he did die. And so that memorial was just recently, this past Saturday on the 24th. And so Santos Rodriguez, we want to always pay tribute to him. No financial benefit came out of it. That was the way it was back when this happened. This was the 48th anniversary of his murder. The 48th anniversary, and his mom is now 77 years old. It also it brings to light, it brings to your memory what happened to Emmett Till in Mississippi and just the injustices that can happen. And a lot of people use the term evil to describe things like this that happen, and almost kind of, I mean, how can you say that it's not? So anyway, we're going to start getting ready to, and I also wanted to mention also concerning Santos, they're going to place a bronze statue of him in a park here in Dallas. The artist, the sculptor, his name is Seth Vanderbilt, and he unveiled the clay model, and ultimately it'll be a bronze statue. And the mother got a chance to go and see the model in the sculptor's home, and she gave her approval. She even did a thumbprint and put it on there. And so, like I said, they didn't get any financial benefit, but they'll get a statue in a park. And the park is, and it'll be a six statue, and it's going to be placed near downtown, the park near downtown, Pikes Park near downtown. So anyway, those are some of the things that are going on in the news. So as Dr. Ife Williams says in her book, Wake Up Everybody, we want to stay woke. We want to stay woke, and you know, my hat's off to take a stance against the, and I'll use the word evil, against the evils of the world, such as this police officer playing Russian roulette up against the temple of a 12-year-old, try to make him confess for taking something from a food item out of a vending machine. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. But the our exit song that we always remind you about is Teddy Pendergrass and Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes, and how he tells us that we need to wake up to what's going on. We need to be aware. We need to not let life just let anything happen and we stay silent. And just as our guest today was talking about, Teddy Pendergrass, we're going to do Teddy Pendergrass. And but our guest Sylvia Donovan Hines was telling us we don't want to be silent, because in history too, African American women were silent about suffering with cancer, and they died needlessly. Many died needlessly just because they were silent about it. But we want people to wake up and stay woke, as Dr. Ife Williams says in her book. And so we're going to play Teddy's song here in a minute. But I always like to remind you of what his lyrics say. And he says, wake up, everybody. No more sleeping in bed. No more backwards thinking. It's time to think ahead. The world has changed. And it has so very much from what it used to be. And then he reminds that there's so much hatred, like the security officers, officers at the Capitol in Washington, D.C., and how they experienced the hatred of those insurrectionists on January 6th. And even those who were African American were called slur names. Names of prejudice and bigotry. Teddy reminds us that there's so much hatred, war, and poverty. And then he gives a message.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back thinking, time for thinking ahead. World's changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Oh, wake up all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. Better if we just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. They don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out. They do it every time. The world won't get no better if we just let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, just you and me. Wake up, everybody! No more sleeping in bed. No
Bye-bye, everybody. Wake up.